We're going to be talking about Caleb this morning. Last week we talked about the spies and they're coming back out of the promised land, giving their report to the people, and how the people, because they were fearful of what the spies said, turned from the promised land and got punished. And so we talked about that last week. And so this week we're going to revisit Joshua and Caleb, specifically Caleb, many, many years after that event takes place, as they have now come into the promised land. So we're going to look in the book of Joshua this morning. In chapter 14, we're going to look at verses 6 through 14, I think is what I had put down this morning. So we're going to look at those verses. So it says, "The sons of Judah drew near to Joshua in Gilgal, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, said to him, 'We know the word which the Lord spoke to Moses, the man of God, concerning you and me in Kadesh Barnea. I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to spy out the land, and I brought word back to him as it was in my heart.'" So let's put this out. Let's do some math this morning. He is 40 years old when he goes to spy out the land. Everybody got that? 40. Okay. Some of you remember 40. Some of you aspire to 40. We'll just leave that at that. All right, next slide, please. So verse 8 says, "Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt with fear. But I followed the Lord my God fully. So Moses swore on that day, saying, 'Surely the land on which your foot has trodden will be an inheritance to you and to your children forever, because you have followed the Lord my God fully.'" Okay, next slide. "Now behold, the Lord has let me live, just as he spoke, these 45 years. Okay, so he was 40 years old when he spied out the land. And now he says, from that day to this one has been 45, which makes him 85. By the way, if you could not come up with that mathematics in your head, we have math teachers on site who can work with you when church is over. Okay? He says, "So from the time that the Lord spoke this word to Moses, when Israel walked in the wilderness, and now behold, I am 85 years old today." Well, yeah, if you read ahead, Bev, that's why we don't read ahead. And for my purposes, that's like close to my father's age. So as I picture Caleb, I'm thinking, okay, all right. And for the record, my father could still beat me up, so that makes sense, okay. He says, "I am still as strong today as I was in the day Moses sent me. As my strength was then, so my strength is now, for war and for going out and coming in." So he says, "I'm as bad a man today as I was 45 years ago." How many of you feel like you were as tough as you were 45 years ago? Some of you going, 45 years ago, I don't even know what that means. All right, next slide. He says, "Now then, give me this hill country about which the Lord spoke on that day. For you heard on that day that the Anakim were there with great fortified cities. Perhaps the Lord will be with me and I will drive them out as the Lord has spoken." So as they have started to divvy up the promised land, there are still areas where they have not driven the enemies out. And apparently Caleb's inheritance is one of those areas. And the Anakim, as you remember, were the giants. These are the people of Goliath. And so there were giants among the Anakim. And so he says, that's my territory, but you give it to me and I'll go take care of it. So Joshua blessed him and gave Hebron to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, for an inheritance. Therefore, Hebron became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, until this day, because he followed the Lord God of Israel fully. So we're going to go back in this text, and we're going to pick up four lessons that we can learn from Caleb, which I think are really important. And we're going to start with the second slide, if we can, with verse 8. All right. So I want you to pay careful attention to what, as he kind of reminisces about what we talked about last week. He says, "Nevertheless, my brethren who went up with me made the heart of the people melt with fear, but I followed the Lord my God fully." Now, this is a really important text. I think every Christian should be familiar with this text, because every one of us has been in some circumstance where we are surrounded by people who do not share our particular viewpoint on the world. And by the way, I'm not talking about politics here. I'm talking about faith. Okay? And so as we live in a world that is hostile to many of the beliefs that we hold dear and we treasure, and that is becoming more and more prevalent, there is more and more pressure on us to conform. And I want you to think back, and I want you to imagine as the children of Israel are standing at the border of the promised land, and they're eagerly anticipating the spies' return. And the spies come back, and they're waiting to hear the report. And here's the report. As they come out, all of a sudden you start hearing this: we can't do it. They're too big. They're too powerful. There's no way we're going to be able to do this. We can't take them. This is not going to go well. They're going to kill us. We're going to die in the wilderness. And so one by one, these spies get up and start giving a bad report. Okay? And then it's Caleb's turn. And he gets up. And he sees that the people are already angry. They're agitated. They're afraid. They're mad. We came out of Egypt. We've traveled all this way. And now this is what's going to happen to us. We're going to die here in the wilderness because of you people. And now Caleb has to stand up and go, I think we can do it. If you have ever been subjected to peer pressure, any of you ever been subjected to peer pressure? We have in our midst this morning a group of people who are preparing to go to college. Some of you are already in college, but some of you are just moved in the dorm. Kayla, you just moved in the dorm, right? Okay. If you think that you have been introduced to crazy people in high school, just wait for the next couple weeks. You ain't seen nothing yet. And by the way, somebody probably told you that when you graduated from elementary school or middle school to go to high school. It's like, oh, you hadn't seen crazy. Wait till you get to high school. If it makes you feel any better, it just keeps getting better. You graduate college and you go out into the real world and you're like, wow, I thought college was the apex, but it wasn't. It was just the jumping off point to insanity. You're going to be exposed to all sorts of craziness as we move through life. We all are. And more in the world we live, we are outnumbered. Where faith is concerned, when I was growing up, when I went to high school, most of my friends at least had some passing concept of church. I mean, they went occasionally, or some went all the time, some went occasionally. I didn't have that many friends who never went. I did have a few, but most everybody went to church some. When I was in high school, we were still predominantly, at least in title, we were still predominantly a Christian nation, a Christian culture. That is not the case anymore. And so increasingly, the words of Caleb in verses 8 and 9 become significant to us. Nevertheless, my brethren, my brothers, they said some bad stuff, man. They terrified everybody. They made everybody's heart melt with fear. But not me. I didn't do that. I stood up among an angry group of spies, and I stood in front of an angry group of people. And what does he say? I love this line. He says, but I followed the Lord my God fully. I followed him fully. I told them what was on my heart. I didn't tell them what they wanted to hear. I didn't tell them what would have been popular at the moment. I didn't tell them that thing which would have made me comfortable and safe among my brethren. I got up and I said what was true in my heart because I followed God. That is an absolutely terrifying thing to have to do sometimes, right? To stand up in front of a group of people and say, this is what I believe. Especially when it's not popular. And most of us in this room, when we leave here today, we're going to go into places where our faith is not particularly popular. Whether it's a workplace this week, whether it's a school, whether it's in a group of friends or our neighborhoods, we are going to be surrounded by people who do not share and appreciate our belief system and our faith. And so the words of Caleb here become important. My brethren did this. They said these things, but I followed God fully. I stood up and said what was on my heart. Okay, so this is what Moses says as a result. He says, surely the land on which your foot has trodden will be an inheritance to you and your children forever because you followed God fully. Does that sound like a promise? Okay. How many of you have ever made somebody a promise that you did not fulfill fast enough to suit the person to whom you promised it to? Caleb comes out of the promised land. I mean, he's standing there. He gives his testimony. The people turn against him. God kind of comes in and regains control of the situation. And Moses says, Caleb, for your testimony, you're gonna see the promised land, buddy. That land that you spied out, that section of the promised land that you spied out where your feet walked, that's going to be yours. And Caleb went, fantastic. So a year goes by. 5 years go by. 10, 20, 30. The way we reckon this, according to Caleb's own words, 45 years after he is promised an inheritance, what happens? They're in the promised land, and he goes up, Joshua says, hey, remember that piece of land I was supposed to get 45 years ago? And Joshua's like, yeah, man, it's all yours. When I was reading that text, the only thing I could think about was that passage where Peter says, the Lord is not slow about his promises, as some count slowness, right? You guys remember that verse? The Lord is not slow about his promises. How many of you have ever been frustrated with how slowly the Lord seems to act in certain situations? We're like, what is he waiting for? I mean, he said he was going to do this thing. This thing's supposed to happen, and I keep waiting for it. And by the way, if you think that he's taken a long time to fulfill some promise you think he made to you, I would remind you that he started promising the Messiah. Well, if we just start with Abraham, if you just start with Abraham, we don't even start with Moses, start with Abraham. How many years was it from Abraham to Jesus? We generally put that somewhere in the ballpark of 2,000 years. Jesus was promised to the children of Israel. The Messiah's coming. Really? Oh, yeah, he's coming. Really? Yeah, he'll be here anytime. Just in a few minutes. It'll be just hang in. He's coming. The Messiah's coming. 100 years, 200 years, 300 years. And you get through Abraham, and you get through Isaac, you get through Jacob, and you get through Moses, and you get through David and Solomon, and still no Messiah. And then all of a sudden, the conquest comes, and the children of Israel hauled off into slavery. Nope, still hasn't come. And they come back and finally reclaim their land during the time of Daniel, and still no Messiah. And this thing goes on and on and on. In fact, God waited so long to fulfill that promise that when he fulfilled the promise, guess what happened to the people? They forgot the promise. They didn't even really remember what it said and didn't remember what it was supposed to be like. And all of a sudden they're looking around going, I thought the Messiah was supposed to be a king. So here's Caleb. He's standing there before Joshua and he's like, hey man, remember that promise that got made to us 45 years ago? That my land, by the way, who was this land originally promised to? Who? Say it like you mean it. Abraham. That's right. Remember? Abraham, pick up your stuff. I want you to move. I want you to go to a land. Oh, by the way, I'm going to show it to you. I'm not going to tell you where it is. You just start walking. I'll be your GPS. Turn left here. Just picture that in God's voice. You know, go a mile and turn at that tree. And that's, you just start walking, Abraham. And then Abraham gets there and God says this. This is the land. You know what this land's going to be? It's going to be your descendants' land. My descendants. So Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and then they go off into Egypt, and there they are for all this time, and now they've come back. And so finally, Caleb's like, this land, 45 years ago, was promised to me. And so it is important for us to understand that we do not work on a time frame that makes sense to us. We work on a time frame that makes sense to God. God has his own time frame. He has his own clock. And so we have a tendency, any of you in here ever impatient? There may be no entertaining thing, more entertaining thing than to sit in a restaurant and watch people who don't get their food when they think they should. I went out to eat a few weeks ago. We were sitting there and we ordered our food. And like these people came in and sat down after we came in and they got their food. And I'm thinking, I wonder how they got their food ahead of us. They came in after us. We had our drinks before they ordered. Okay, well, maybe what we ordered, maybe somebody in my crew ordered something that takes longer to cook and is more expensive. Maybe. Well, then the next people that had come in behind them got their food. And so now I'm starting to get agitated, you know, because we get agitated when we think something's out of line, not working. So the waitress comes over and she said, your food should be out any minute. And I'm thinking, 45 years later, you know, that may be the minute I started working on the sermon. I don't know. So finally, like 10 minutes after she told us that, you know, our food came out. And by the way, it was tasty and worth the wait. But not while I was waiting. Because we get impatient. I'm the most impatient when I'm driving. When I'm sitting at the stoplight and the light changes and the yo-yo in front of me is on their phone and they don't move. And it's like, you know, and the Lord's probably there going, Stuart, you don't have somebody on life support in your car, man. You're not heading to the hospital. Just calm down. Calm down. There ain't nothing where you're going as important as you think it is. How many of you drive like that? Yeah, I know some of you do. It's like, man, if I don't get there in 17 seconds, the bomb's going to go off and we're all going to die. So we have these things where we're impatient. And by the way, I think a lot of people secretly get impatient with God because we try to live a life that we think is pleasing to him, and we try to go to church, we put money in the plate, and we do all these things that we think we're supposed to do, and then we think because we do that, there's supposed to be something coming our way, and then we sit there sometimes and we're like, well, you know, I keep waiting, and I'm not getting all this stuff I think I'm supposed to get, and we start getting impatient, and we get angry, we get impatient, we get mad. And we get frustrated. And then we look at people who aren't nearly as good as we are. Like, well, they're getting blessed. Things seem to be working good for them. And that's a lousy person. Where are my blessings? And so we get impatient. And that was one of the reasons that Peter wanted people to remember. You know, the Lord's not slow about his promises as you think of slowness. Okay? He's not. That's not how it works. He tarries because he doesn't want anyone to perish. He's on his own schedule. Don't worry about it. And so here stands Caleb, 45 years later. All right? Now, if that's not enough, let's look at the next verse. Verse 10. He says, now behold, the Lord has let me live just as he spoke these 45 years from the time the Lord spoke to the word in Moses when Israel walked in the wilderness. And now behold, I'm 85. How many of you would be thinking, I'm too old to enjoy this land now? I'm 85. I'm going to get there in time to get buried on it. That's what I would be thinking. That's what I would be thinking. Somebody asked me the other day, said, Stuart, how long do you think you'll live? I said, probably 10 minutes after I make the last college loan payment. I think I'll make the last college loan payment, and then I'll drop dead. That would be my luck. That's what I'm thinking. My wife's thinking her luck would be I'd drop dead before the payments got finished, and then she'd get stuck with the bill. But don't worry, I got a life insurance policy, so that might actually work out better for her. I don't know. I'm joking, baby. I'm joking. I'm just joking. I'm joking. But it says, you know, 45 years I've waited to get to the promised land, and now at 85, I'm ready. He goes, so, and now behold, I'm 85 years old, and I'm still as strong today as I was in the day of Moses. As my strength was then, so my strength is now. Now, there's a couple of ways that people have interpreted this passage. Some people think that Caleb's just bragging that he's still as tough as he used to be, and maybe he's not. Some people believe that this is actually a fulfillment of some supernatural promise that God had made that Caleb's strength would not leave him until he took possession of his land. Now, well, I'm not really sure which one it is. But regardless, Caleb's like, I'm still as bad as I was then. 85, let's go. So my strength is now for war and for going out and coming in. Next slide. Now listen to this. I've waited 45 years to take possession of the land that's been promised me. Oh wait, by the way, give me this hill country about which the Lord spoke on that day. For you heard on that day that the Anakim were there with great fortified cities. Perhaps the Lord will be with me and I will drive them out. Which means what? They're still there. Caleb has waited 45 years to take possession of the land. And when it's time to take possession of the land, what's he got to go do now? He's got to fight for it. Now, as best we can tell from the record, the children of Israel have spent 7 years up to this point driving their enemies out of the promised land. And they've gotten a bunch of them, but there's still patches of people that are left. And one of the areas that's left is in Hebron, where Caleb's going to go. And so he spent 7 years cleaning out everybody else's inheritance. He's been fighting battles and driving out the enemy. And now it's 85. That should be retirement time, right? Now, let me ask you a question. Does he sound angry or bitter? 85 years old and still got work to do. This is, you know, I've spent 40 years in the wilderness. I've spent the last five to seven years driving the enemy out of the promised land for everybody else so they could take possession of it. And all that time, nobody's driving out the enemy from my land. And so now I've come to collect. Oh, and by the way, it's an unfinished promise. Here's your land, but you're going to have to go fight for it. Well, what have I been doing for the last 7 years? Any of you ever felt like you've earned a break? You ever feel like that? Like, you know, really? Everything I've done, everything I do, I really deserve a break. Really, something good should go my way because I really have earned that. I deserve it. I felt like that before. I'm sure most of you have. Here's Caleb, 40 years in the wilderness, last 7 years fighting the enemy. Let me take my land. Oh, wait a minute. It's full of giants. It's full of the Anakim. We got to go run them out. I'm 85 years old. If that was most people, they'd be like this. Really, God? You promised me all this stuff. You made me wait 45 years for it, and you couldn't even run them out for me. Now, having to conquer your own land that's been promised to you is almost like having to go out and buy yourself a birthday present. What's that? It's a present. Well, who got that for you? I did. Really? I paid for it myself. Does it really feel like a present when you pay for it yourself? No, not really. Caleb has waited all this time, and he has waited 45 years, and now the inheritance that was promised to him, it's not even being given to him. He's got to go take it. One of my favorite shows is I like NCIS Los Angeles. I like that show. Some of you are nodding your head. You like Deeks, don't you? It's okay. One of the characters on that show, his name is Sam Hanna. That's played by former rapper LL Cool J. I had to say it like that so everybody knows. I'm actually still down. I'm actually old enough to remember when LL Cool J was still, in fact, a rapper and not an actor. But he plays a Navy SEAL, and they have this motto, and he's always quoting it on the show. The only easy day, was that Jamie? Was yesterday. That's the Navy SEAL motto. The only easy day was yesterday. Now, somewhere online, some Navy SEALs are going, that is not our real motto. Stop watching TV. I don't know. They sure make it sound good on television. But he says that all the time. Only easy day was yesterday. Well, you know what? That may be true for Christians. You know, we a lot of us have grown up in a land where it was pretty easy being a Christian. It seemed like it was fairly easy. The world wasn't very combative. It wasn't very difficult. But, you know, things are changing in our country. They're changing our world. And it's getting a little bit more complicated to be a person of faith in this world. And we, a lot of us like it to go back. We just want it to be easy. We want to take the path of least resistance to heaven, right? We want to get around all the obstacles. We don't want any conflict. We don't want any trouble. We don't want anybody upset with us. We want to take the path of least resistance. If we could just follow that path to heaven and go, whoo, that was easy. That was fantastic. But that's not how things work. And so we find ourselves in this situation where we want badly to get to a point as a Christian. We say, I'm done. I've done my stuff. I've done my time. I've put in my hours. Now I just get to sit back and wait for my reward. Does that sound familiar? Does anybody remember a character in the Bible who talked like that? That's right. The parable of the farmer. Who had amassed these massive grain bins. He had built bigger storage bins. And what did he say? He said, I have done my work. I have stored up my grain. And now what am I going to do? I'm going to sit back. I'm going to eat, drink, and be merry. Because I've put my time in. I've done my work. So now it's time for me to sit back and cash in. And what did Jesus call that guy? He said, you fool. Your soul is, the Lord looked at him and said, you're a fool. Tonight, your soul is going to be required of you. Now, take a minute and think about the implication of that parable. If you're a Christian sitting in this room and you're thinking, I've done my time, man. I've put my work in. It's time for me. I'm going to kick back now. I'm going to kick back now and just coast in because I've built up some equity. I got some equity in my relationship with the Lord. And so I'm just going to sit back. I'm going to cash in. I'm going to cash in all my favors because God owes me a lot. And I'm just going to coast in. The sad thing is there may be some people in this room that really had never done that much work and are still thinking that. I'm going to coast in because that's really all I have to do, right? I don't have to put in any work. Repent and be baptized. I did that. And now I just get to slide in, right? So there's a really great role model in Caleb is at 85 years old, when he sees the work yet to be done, he doesn't complain. He doesn't go, well, really, God? Really? This is the best you can do for me? I stand up in front of everybody and I tell them how great the promised land is, and they threaten to stone me, but I was faithful. I didn't gripe the 40 years you made me wander with the losers. I mean, they had to wander, and so I had to wander with them. And I had to wander because they were stupid, not me. I got punished. Any of you ever got punished for somebody else's mistakes? Yeah, I didn't even do nothing wrong. But I had to wander for 40 years with those clowns because they wouldn't listen. And I never complained. And I didn't complain in the 5 years that I've been wandering all over the promised land, running out the enemy so other people could settle that my inheritance. And now, at 85, I'm ready to take my inheritance, and it's still full of enemies. You couldn't even move them out for me. But that's not what he says. He goes to Joshua and says, hey man, I'm 85. I'm bad as I was 45 years ago. Let's do this. And if you notice, he specifically says, if we could go back a slide. Oh yeah. Verse 11. I am still as strong today as I was the day that Moses sent me, and my strength was then, so my strength is now. And what's the next word? For war. I ain't scared. You know how embarrassing it's going to be for a giant to get killed by an 85-year-old man? They're fixing to find out. Want some? Get some. Here I come. You're in my house. I'm coming to get it. I'm 85 and I'm angry. And I'm going to take my land. He's not mad. He's not complaining. He's not griping. He said, you know what? There's still work to be done. And I'm 85 and I'm going to go do my work. I'm going to go do my work. I'm going to get up and I'm going to take possession of what God has promised me. And I'm not going to complain about it. I'm just going to get out there and get it done. All right. Last slide, please. So as we get down to the end, it says, therefore, Hebron became the inheritance of Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, until this day. Because, and this is critical, because he followed the Lord God of Israel fully. Now, there are multiple times in that text where that descriptive word is used as how Caleb followed God. It doesn't just say he followed God. It says, what do you think that means? Fully. Now, what do you think that means? What do you think it means to single a guy out as, now he wasn't just, he didn't just follow God. He followed God fully. Now, I would dare say that most of us in this room, at some point in our walk with God, have been people who followed God, sort of. Any of you ever been like that? Any of you ever been sort of followers? I think probably a lot of us have. And what that means is that most of the time, we follow God. We do most of the stuff we're supposed to do, except the stuff that doesn't make sense to us. Or the stuff that makes us unhappy. We don't follow God when stuff makes us unhappy, or we don't follow God if it's really inconvenient. We follow God when it's convenient, when it's easy, when it makes sense to us. You know, we follow the commands that we like. The commands that don't make sense to us, we ignore those. We kind of treat it like a buffet. Any of you remember buffets? Any of you miss a buffet like I do? I miss a buffet. Oh, I miss a buffet. Dorona's got to go. I got to get back to... I have to tell you, this is funny. I went to lunch the other day, and one of my friends looked at me and said, Stu, you got Dorona? I said, why would you even ask me? He goes, looks like you've lost some weight. I said, you ain't got to get Dorona to lose weight, man. You just got to eat salad. He said, you hate salad. I said, that's right. When you eat something you hate, you lose weight. That's a good plan for all of you. Just start eating stuff you don't like. You'll lose weight. But, you know, it's like, I think about this thing that we when God says, I want you to do this, we're like, how about if I do this instead? I want to cut some corners. Trust me, I love God. I want to follow God. I want to follow him on my terms. And it says, Caleb got his inheritance. And when this was written, when this was written down, when the book of Joshua was written down, whoever scribed it, whatever time that took place, Caleb's people still controlled that land because he did run the Anakim out of that place at 85 years old. And he did take possession of that territory. And it's still his ancestors to the day that this was written. And the writer says, you know why that was the case? It's not because Caleb was a bad man at 85. It's not because he was the greatest warrior in the history of Israel. It's not even because he was a brilliant military tactician. All those things might have been true, but none of them are why he took possession of his land. He took possession of it because he followed God fully. In the times when it didn't make sense. I sat in a classroom one time. Someone had got caught cheating, but the teacher didn't know who. So the teacher came in and said, everybody gets a zero. I couldn't afford a zero in that class. There were people who could. I was not one of those people. What do you think was the resounding chorus phrase that came out of the class? That's not fair. You can imagine what 40 years of wandering through the wilderness were like for Caleb. Oh, look. Manna again. Yay. What's that now? 27 straight years. Manna in the morning. Woohoo. You know why I'm eating manna? Because your parents were stupid. Your parents were stupid. You were stupid, but you hadn't died yet, but you're going to. I'm out here wandering in the wilderness eating manna and dragging around the desert because you guys wouldn't take the land when God tried to give it to you. And guess what? I'm paying for your unfaithfulness. Does that sound unfair? Is there anybody in this room that think what happened to Caleb and Joshua was unfair? I think it was. Of course, I'm not the judge. But here's the thing. Caleb didn't complain about it. Caleb looked at God and said, hey, this is your will. This is your judgment. Okay. You going to give me my promised win? 45 years? I'll wait. I'm on your clock. I'll do whatever. And Caleb was one of the leaders of the children of Israel for 40 years as they wandered the wilderness. And now they've come back in. And now Caleb is able to take possession of what was promised to him, not because of any other thing except that he followed God fully. There's going to be a day when we stand before the Lord. And he's going to judge whether or not we get to enter into the promised land. And we're not going to have to fight for it at that point. It's just going to be that, come on in. Take possession of what was promised to you. If the criteria for you to take possession of the land promised to you by Jesus Christ, if the criteria is that you followed God fully, will you get your land? We put a lot of emphasis in Christianity, and for good reason. We put a lot of emphasis on forgiveness and grace and mercy, and all those things certainly should be preached and taught because they are critical to our ability to receive salvation. But that does not change that God expects a level of faithfulness from us. And he expects us to follow him fully. We're going to sing our communion hymn this morning, a time when we gather together at the table to celebrate the sacrifice that has opened the door to the promised land for us. That inheritance that we were promised on the day we accepted Christ. And that door was opened by the blood of Christ at his crucifixion. And so today, we're gonna meet around that table. And so I want to challenge you as we prepare to do that, as we sing this song this morning, to ask yourself as we prepare for that meal together one very simple question. If I stood before God today, would he identify me as someone who followed him fully?